All right, you're tuned in to 92.7 FM WMDX, listening to the Black Conversion Show with your girl, Brandy Grayson. I am so happy that you're listening and you're tuned in to the Hostess with the Mostest. Today, we're going to discuss a few things, but first, let me address Cousin Clyde that's missing from the show. Cousin Clyde is my co-host for the Black Conversion Show, and the Black Conversion Show is really based on looking at different topics, different things that impact Black communities locally in the Dane County area in Madison, Wisconsin, and looking at things that, you know, impact Black people on a larger scale and addressing Cousin Clyde. So he's my co-host and I've been so used to him being part of the show and he's out today. So boo-hoo to him, sending him nothing but love. I hope all is well with Clyde. So now I have to adjust to talking to you guys, which is no problem, but still, it's like, Cousin Clyde, where you at? But one of the things that I want to discuss with you guys or continue the conversation on is actually Black love. And the reason that this topic keeps coming up is because we get a lot of positive feedback on the topic and people want to hear more on it. And I had found a couple of clips that I wanted to play because one of the clips talk about really what is love, because we often like to look at love as this thing that's full of softness, kindness, kind of peace, joy, and happiness, as if love is an experience that always feels good. I'm not sure where we get that notion from when it comes to love. I think it starts from Disney. I don't know, Disney's, you know, Cinderella stories about love and how some man on a horse or some man kisses, you know, woman kisses the frog turns into this handsome person and he's doing everything right. But I want us to take a listen to our first clip. Luke, let's play the clip on the young lady that's talking about what love demands. And then we're going to talk through that. Take a listen, y'all. This is pretty good.
Love, we want connection, we want family, we want these things. The vision we have, it just
well, you want what you
happening.
Think is love.
Yeah,
people don't necessarily want love, they want what they think is love. That's why when they get love, they tend to walk away from it because they don't have the capacity for the well that love brings in. So, you want what you think is love. That's why they say what you said wasn't loving. Well, whose standard? Because God's love rebukes, God loves corrects. God love doesn't feel good at first because it changes you. Most people want to remain the same. So you want lust. You want what you think is love. But most people don't want love.
Wait, so what is love when it comes from another person?
It's all of those things. The goal is to become the better version of who you are. You should never want to be with somebody that's content with who you are today. Right? Like, we're always achieving to be a better version of ourselves. Most of the time, you can't even define that with your own eyes because it's like you looking at a wall with no mirror. You can't see yourself. It's normally the person that comes in that can see you and say, hey, you know, this is wrong with you. And you're like, no, I didn't notice that. I thought I was fine. They're like, no, you got to change that up. That's love, to say I demand a better you. But if somebody is not prepared for that demand, then they start thinking it's criticism or I'm offended that you said that or I don't like that you did that. Well, no, you just wanted a puppet, but you didn't want somebody that brought in real love.
I love that clip because I've been wrestling with this idea of love, and not just in intimate relationships, but friendships and in leadership and managing people and my relationships to my children, my relationship to my mom, and other people that I care about. And for people who are just tuned in, you're listening to the Black Conversion Show on 92.7 FM, and you're listening to the Hostess with the Mostest, Brandy Grayson. I am the founder and CEO of Urban Triage, a local nonprofit organization. And one of the things that we do as part of our programming is we have a work group that's called Supporting Healthy Black Families. And I teach this work group a couple times a week. And the purpose of this work group is to support people known as Black in developing themselves, developing their communication skills,
developing their ability to be in relationship with others, whether it's intimate or partner, and developing themselves professionally. So one of the things that we've been talking about this week is what love demands of us, and how we know when we're full of BS is when we reach out to people that we know will validate our BS. And what I mean is, oftentimes when we have an argument with someone we love, or falling out or breakdown with people in our life, we will call the people that will say, girl, you so right, he was so wrong, or girl, you so right, she was so wrong, and yeah, who was your boss to say that, or yeah, who was that person to say that? And the reason we do that is because we don't really like to be challenged, and we often are conditioned in our society to think that when people criticize you, or when people redirect you, or when people demand things of you, that that experience is negative. However, what I'm coming to realize is that the people who love me, like authentically love me, will always challenge me, right? They will challenge me to grow. They will challenge me to see how I'm showing up in people activities. They will challenge me to be a better person than yesterday. And I bring that up because oftentimes in our relationships, in people known as Black relationships, the dynamics, oftentimes we're looking for someone to save us. We're looking for someone to be our happy place. And that's just not how it works. Because when you get in relationships, it brings out the worst of you, and sometimes, and often the best in you. So it brings out both sides of you. However, when the worst of you shows up, we have to be able to acknowledge that part of us. And in our Supporting Healthy Black Families work group, I often challenge our participants to reflect on how they show up in communication with people around them, and specifically our children, right? So our children usually get the bolt of our, I guess, our discontentment, our unhappiness. And when we're frustrated, we vomit on our children, right? So in our relationships, whether it's a family dynamic or intimate relationship, we forget that the way that we speak to people and at people is a reflection of our hearts. So one of the things that we've been working on in Supporting Healthy Black Families is reflecting on our conversations, reflecting on who we reach out to when there's breakdowns, and what we're expecting of them to give to us, and what we consider acceptable feedback. And oftentimes, like I just pointed out, if someone's demanding something from us, it feels uncomfortable. We often move away from that person, because who are you to tell me that I need to do better or do differently? And I really struggle with that in all aspects, because I'm found to be in my personal relationships, even with my children, my friends, and my partner, as very demanding. I demand the best of everyone around me. I demand the best of my staff. I demand the best of partnerships. I demand, demand, demand. And demanding is often seen as a masculine attribute. So as I'm demanding the best, as I'm demanding the people around me level up, step up, and live from a place of excellence and brilliance, and specifically Black people, because we are so competent of it, I'm often seen as too demanding, or it's hard to articulate how other people see me, but I often feel like I love you, like especially Black people. Like I'm so in love with Black people, it's ridiculous. And I think it's because I spent so much time not loving myself. So, and being told that I was less than or not worthy and stupid, or just you're dark skinned, or just terrible things that I was told growing up. So I am utterly in love with Black people. And as I've done the work of growth, and I have so much more to do, so don't get me talking at you or explaining my point of view or my thoughts around love and demanding as I've arrived, because God knows I have not arrived. I have probably 100 more layers of this onion to pull back. But what I have figured out about myself is that I love Black people so much that I demand the best of them. So if you work for Urban Triage, which Just as a FYI, as a little plug, we are hiring. So check out our website at urbantriage.org. That's urbantriage.org. And you're listening to 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show. But I demand the best of our employees. I demand that you show up centered in customer service. I demand that you center the humanity of the clients that we serve. I don't care if they come into our office with less than appropriate hygiene. I don't care if they're coming in, breaking down, screaming, having a traumatic experience. I expect you to stand anchored and grounded in yourself and knowing that their response to you isn't about you. I demand that we show up on work on time. I demand that we're professional and not in the sense of like this professional construct that's giving up to us through white supremacy, but professional in terms of how we communicate, not screaming, not using the F-bomb, not using the N-word while we're at work, but showing up in a way that allows the people who come into our office to be served and supported, that they feel seen. So love demands you to grow. Love demands you to look at yourself. Love demands accountability. And I think that's the piece that we be missing a lot of times in our relationships and friendships, because the person that's demanding growth or looking at you to be better than yesterday is often criticized for their expectation. So today, you guys, we're talking about love. I always start off, and I think I'm going to continue this, starting off the Black Conversion Show talking about love, because it's one of those things we generally say, but we don't really define. We don't figure out how to, that the expansionness of love. We like to think like love, you know, we quote the Bible, love is kind, love is patient, love is, you know, love feels good, but love also feels painful. Love also feels uncomfortable. When you have to yell at your child and stop them from running across the street through traffic, that's love. You think your kid is going to be like, oh, mom, that felt good to be yelled at. No, sometimes you have to snatch up your kids out of love to redirect them. Sometimes we have to have heart consequences because love demands that we do, because if we don't learn the consequences of our actions, then we continue to do things that cause harm. So it is really important, whether we're talking about friendship, intimate relationship, leadership, management, talking to your staff, developing your staff, is that we demand the best of them at all times. Because living in the context of white supremacy for people known as Black, we're often awarded from being mediocre. We're actually awarded for not living up to our expectation. And we can see the consequences of that in our educational system with people known as Black and our children. Our teachers aren't expecting excellence. They're not demanding excellence. Our policies reflect the lack of demand of excellence from our children, like this whole new behavior model at MMSD and through our country, that kids can come and just behave in ways that is unacceptable. So we're going to continue when we return, not just to talk about love, but talk about environmental justice. I want to talk to you guys about the statistics and how our environment for Black people are literally killing us. Stay tuned. You're listening to 92.7 FM WMDX, the Black Conversion Show with your girl, Brandi Grayson.
I'm so deep in my bag like a grandma with a peppermint. They say, oh, she smell good. That's just because I'm heaven sent.
All right, you're tuned in to your girl, the hostess with the mostest, Brandi Grayson, on 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show. I love being here, and I love that you're listening. And the conversation today started about Black love. And one of the things that we often talk about is the dynamics in relationships and this whole construct around femininity and masculinity. I know you guys are probably so tired of me talking about it, but it just keeps showing up in my daily life and my daily interactions. Luke, I want you to do me a favor and play the second clip, because when I heard this clip, I thought like, man, well, this point of view is pretty interesting. And I often think it gets left from the conversation around relationships, dynamics, and love. Go ahead, Luke, and play that for me.
You can't want a 50-50 chick and still want to be the man of the house. You can't expect your woman to go clock in and listen to another man for 8 to 10 hours and then come home and listen to you. It's not possible. It's not going to happen. So if you want to be the man and you want a woman to be submissive and you want her to be to clean up the house and give you whenever you want, you got to show her that you're the man. You got to let her live in her femininity. You can't be like, okay, go out there in the world and be a masculine, because you have to be masculine to survive the world, and then come home and be feminine to me. It ain't gonna work like that.
Well, see, and this is a conversation that keeps coming up for me in my world, and mainly because I exist in the world as a woman in leadership, right? So oftentimes I exhibit, and I have to exhibit, masculine attributes, like very, again, demanding, very matter of fact, very direct. And sometimes I have to come off, and maybe I don't have to, and you guys correct me, but I come off as really, or perceived as cold, because when I said what I said, right? And I have to be like that with my son sometimes too. Like, dude, I said what I said. Go do what I asked you to do. And that way of being can be considered less than feminine. And I think as people known as Black, we really need to talk more about power dynamics and constructs, and look at why we believe masculinity fits in this box and why do we believe femininity fits in another box. What he said that stood out to me, though, was men expect, you know, nowadays, this new generation, I'm kind of old school. Okay, y'all, I'm almost 50 and I feel like I'm old school. I do believe, and I'm talking from a heteronormative perspective, first of all, but these dynamics also play out in other relationships and dynamics. But I'm speaking in this moment from my experience. Oftentimes in the new generations, there's this idea of going Dutch, this idea of going 50-50, this idea of women, you know, paying their own way. And then at the same time, the expectation that women are still submissive, or you need to be soft. And I often am confused about that dynamic, because how do you be soft in the world that demands you to be hard if I'm going to be providing 50-50? And the thing about people known as Black, and especially Black women, we actually provide more than 50-50. And most of our relationships, we're doing more financial covering, right? Like we're paying most of the bills because of the dynamics that's happening in our communities. But not only that, because I don't think that provision is just financial. I think provision is spiritual. I think provision is emotional. I think provision is mental. I think provision is setting up boundaries. I think provision is letting other people know, outside of your relationship, that you have the person you with covered. Like one of the things I believe as a heteronormative cis woman is that I want my partner to cover me. Should no one ever be able to disrespect me in front of my partner without him checking them? I should never feel like another woman or man can come up to me and harm me in any kind of way, or have harmful conversations with my partner about me. Like one of the things that, for example, I have an up and down relationship with my kid's father, and people who know me as, you know me, a lot of people know me and people know who my kid's father is. And I actually had him on my show recently, and a lot of people seen him in the newspaper recently. And we'll talk about that on another show, and the impact of having a parent indicted on federal charges. My kid's father, my kid is 7. He's about to be 8. He recently was indicted on 14 counts of federal charges. And it is, I don't even have a word to explain what that feels like for me as a person, or the anxiety around my son and moving forward. But once I have an opportunity to process what has occurred, I'll spill all the beans and share the tea with you about that. But again, you're listening to 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show on WMDX. And we're talking about Black love and what love demands, and how in the demand, in this construct of love, we have these constraints regarding masculinity and femininity. And we just listened to a clip that gave the man gave his opinion that how can you expect women to live in their femininity when they're carrying the bulk of the responsibility? And I also struggle with that. I struggle with how do I soften and expand, and when I carry the bulk of everything, and I mean not necessarily in my personal relationship or intimate, but in the world, right? Like, so you take care of everybody all day. You're thinking about, what does my staff need? What does the community need? Let me go advocate for this. Let me respond to the racism that I experience, or the anti-Blackness I experience, or the misogyny. And then I come home and I'm expected to be soft and gentle, or I don't know. I have a hard time like finding the word words to explain the expectations for Black women and the outside forces that actually doesn't align with said expectation. So I don't want to take a stance either way about femininity or masculinity. I really want us just to start opening up the conversation about the dynamics of relationships and how these dynamics have been given to us and these constructs have been given to us through white supremacy racism. Because for white women, it's like they're indoctrinated. And these are general statements. That doesn't mean every white woman is indoctrinated in this way, but generally through our media, through our movies, through everything, it's like white women are conditioned to be taken care of. Your job is to be taken care of. Your job is to find you a man that can take care of you. When it's time for you to have a baby, you get to sit down and not work and being taken care of. And when black women are approach relationships in the same way, we're actually told that we're gold diggers, right? Like, you're a gold digger, you're looking for a man to take care of you. And I'm just flabbergasted. Is that a word, flabbergasted? I don't know, but it sounds about right. I'm just blown away with the expectation for us not to desire to be taken care of, because I live in the old school realm, but I believe men should take care of their women. Do I think women should sit at home and be barefooted and not cook? I mean, have to cook and clean and not have jobs or careers? No, I believe that people should be able to self-actualize like they want to. And if I desire for a man to pay my bills, I want to live that way. I think that helps us be soft too, like not carrying everything. So anyway, we're going to move on from this conversation, but it just keeps coming up in all kind of dynamics and coming up in the stress of black women and how people are so stressful carrying everything and working two or three jobs and trying to hold space also for the mental wellness of black men, because black men aren't well. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And June is Mental Health Month for men. And the statistics shows that black men are almost 10 times as likely to want to die and commit suicide. It also shows that black teenagers and black boys are often 10 times likely to commit suicide. So we really need to look at the mental wellness and our ability to teach our boys and men how to self-regulate. And let's talk about that a little later when we return. You're listening to 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show, with your girl, Brandi Grayson. All right, you're listening to your girl, Brandi Grayson, on 92.7 FM, WMDX, The Black Conversion Show. Thank you for joining me. One of the things that came up in our conversation is suicide rates and the mental health of black people, generally speaking, and specifically black men. Black men aren't doing well in our society. Black boys aren't doing well. Black people ain't doing well. Most of our country is not doing well mentally. And a lot of times when we have these conversations around mental health and mental wellness, we go back to COVID. I have come to believe we blame everything on COVID, how because of COVID, people aren't mentally well. Because of COVID, our economy isn't well. Because of COVID, and the truth be told is that these things were falling apart prior to COVID. What happened when COVID hit is it compounded those issues and it made them more visible, I think, because for the first time in our history, we slowed down. Also, for the first time in our history, I believe the way my father states it is that COVID was the largest transfer of wealth in the United States history. And we can talk about that conspiracy theory later, because we're talking about mental health. But I often think, like, dang, COVID happened. It was this big thing. Everything was shut down. Small businesses closed. Middle class shrunk. All the wealth was transferred to the billionaires. And we still haven't covered. And there doesn't seem to be a plan to support people who lost everything, especially middle class people, to putting them back in the position, or at least providing resources and opportunities to reposition folks who lost everything. But back to my point, which is the mental health of Black men and Black boys and Black people. It is a serious problem in our community. One of the things that I've noticed in the work with Urban Triage, which is the organization that I found and I am the CEO of, is that the folks that we serve at Urban Triage and the men that we serve, they have the biggest challenge that I feel like folks that we serve face is alcoholism. And it's one of those diseases that go under the radar for Black people, because I feel like we don't think drinking is a big deal. We think using crack is a big deal, or being a heroin addict is a big deal. But when we think about alcohol, it's just so much part of our culture and our way of partying or connecting or relating that we're not paying attention to what alcohol is doing to our family's dynamics. So I have been recently talking to our participants of our Supporting Healthy Black Families work group about alcoholism. And one of my participants said, like, hey, my partner drinks at least a gallon of Dose every day. And Dose, I think, is a cognac or some dark liquor. Apparently, I'm not good with pronouncing words today. But the person drinks a gallon or a pint of this. A gallon is huge. Maybe it's not a gallon. It's probably a pint. But a pint of this every day. And he is unable to engage with his family because he's drunk. And also because of the alcohol use, he's angry, right? He's hurting. And what alcohol it usually does is covering up the deeper rooted problem, which is pain or anxiety or uncertainty. And because of the society we exist in, men are taught that, generally speaking, men are taught that they're not allowed to feel the things that they feel. The only thing that they're really allowed to feel is anger. And they, if they cry, if they say, I'm not doing well, I need help, then we have, and even women, like we see our men as weak for reaching for help. And these are general statements, again, because I don't want you guys to email me saying that's not true. I'm not saying it's true for everybody. I'm just saying from my experience, this is what I've witnessed. So the suicide rates, I really want to talk about, because our kids are like dying left and right. Our men are tapping out of life. So Luke, let's do me a favor. Let's listen to this clip about suicide rates and the studies of suicide rates in Black people and Black families and Black communities. Take a listen, y'all.
Tammy Charles lost her 10-year-old son to suicide last year. She talked to NBC about the bullying he suffered.
Do you think race played a factor in Seven's depression?
Absolutely. 100%. And it all started with the little girl that called him the racial slur. I was a 9-year PTA parent. I was at the school once a week. I did every single thing. So I was under the impression, not our child, only because we were so involved. So anything pertaining to our child, we would have some sort of equality. But unfortunately, Rahima, that wasn't true.
Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters in Norfolk noticed an increase in cases of their emergency department and outpatient clinics.
We certainly have had an influx of referrals recently, and we've certainly continued along a path that we have so many referrals for kids that we, no matter the number of providers, will have a really difficult time meeting that need.
CHKD is currently building a mental health hospital to address this growing health crisis. And Director of Mental Health Services Line Stephanie Osler says they're working on more community involvement.
How can we provide school-based mental health? How can we get into the communities where kids are and provide that mental health support?
Meantime, consider these images of racial protest and police brutality your kids are seeing right now. Osler urges daily check-ins to make sure they're okay.
If your child is struggling,
I think that's good, Luke. I think that's good. I think one of the things that they pointed out is how racism plays into the suicide rates and how our children are internalizing racial slurs. But more importantly, in my opinion, is how we are engaging with our children around mental health? Are we engaging with our children? Are we having real conversations? And can we? Like, if you're not doing well as parents, right? And we know the statistics for Black people, I don't know them off the top of my head, but we know they're bad, right? Because that's all the politicians talk about it. Everywhere, anywhere, if you see a government official, they're talking about Black numbers, Black people this, Black people that. Oh, look at the numbers. So we know that the numbers are bad. But if our numbers are bad, and as it relates to our family dynamics, poverty, housing, economics, how do we provide protective factors for our children? How do we provide additional support for our men who are 10 times more likely to commit suicide than Black women? And how do we do this? I don't know how we do it. It's just questions that I'm asking. It's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like the conversations, like our debate last night with Trump, when Trump and Biden was debating, one of the questions was around race. They asked Biden, like, hey, Black people actually aren't that happy with you. They're still suffering. And actually, there are the numbers have gotten worse for Black people under your watch. And Biden, instead of addressing the question, Biden was like, hey, we've done all these things for Black people. And he went down a whole list explaining how his group, him and his people, have helped Black people. He named the unemployment rate going down. He named that Black businesses have increased. He's named student loans and how they've been written off. But let me just first say shout out to Biden and his administration for the write off of student loans, because I believe I myself personally had like $60,000 written off. So big ups to the Biden administration for that. And you're listening to 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show, WMDX. But I think sometimes people miss the mark on addressing the needs of people known as Black, even in housing and other areas, including suicide and mental wellness, because one, the only way that we address things in our community that are killing us is by investing resources. And we often talk about the challenges and the conflicts and the issues, but we don't offer real tangible solutions to uprooting the issue. And you can always tell what we value in our communities by our budget line items. So, for example, like in our area, in the Madison local area, I think like 60% of our budget goes to policing. And I believe, like, I'm probably lying, y'all, so look it up, but it's like 8 to 10% goes to mental wellness, and 8 to 10% of that is divided amongst like all these organizations and agencies. So agencies end up with maybe $100,000 to do mental health work. And if you know anything about mental wellness, when you go see a psychiatrist or your therapist, they charge $150 an hour. And if you need to see that therapist once a week or a couple times a week, the money is just not, is the math is not mathing. And in our community, in the Dane County community, if you are suffering from mental health, if you're having a breakdown, like a psychotic breakdown right now, it takes you a year and a half on a waiting list to get support. Everyone refers everyone to Journey Mental Health, and they don't have the capacity, and they don't have the, let's just say they don't have the people that reflect the population that they are, I don't know, are supposed to serve. So then people are sent to agencies to get help for mental health needs, and they're harmed. So then the issue is compounded. So I don't know. I don't know why I'm talking about this. I think because it's Mental Health Month for men, and really just increasing the awareness of the effects. And I was actually hoping that I would have co-hosts, because my co-hosts really do work with a lot of men around mental health and the impacts. And I wanted him to talk deeply about that, but he left me today. So I'm going to try not to take it personal, but it's fine. It's fine. I could talk to you guys by myself. It's okay. Y'all can tell I'm a little sad about it, but it's okay. Okay. I'm going to be fine. It's okay. I won't cry on air. But I do want us to really think about, like, even the conversation I was having before about what love demands and these constructs around femininity and masculinity. How can we demand, like, and this is the thing about society. Like, on one hand, as a woman, I'm like, I want my man to provide these things. And on the other hand, for Black people and Black men don't have the same access, opportunities, or resources to provide the things that we're demanding. So how do we reconcile the demand that love makes on our partners, our families, and how do we support people where they're at so that they can reach the demands and expectations to show up fully as a father, as a community leader, as a business person? I don't have the answers, but I do know being Black in our current context and being Black, period, has always been complex. It's just so complex. Like, and I always encourage people, the way out or the way through all the complexities, whether it's all the isms, sexism, ageism, misogyny, all that stuff, phobia, homophobia, all that stuff, is to really focus on ourselves, focus on developing ourselves, focus on developing our skills around communication, focusing on how to regulate our nervous system, how to calm our nervous system, how to become aware of our own scripts and ideas and thoughts and beliefs about ourselves and about the world. Because what happens is that we live in this world that gives us all these negative thoughts and ideas about us. And then we internalize those thoughts and then we project them out. And then we don't even know that we are actually creating this world, which is leading up to all these messed up statistics. So even though I talk a lot about white supremacy, racism, and the impact of racism on people known as Black, the biggest impact, in my opinion, is that racism has convinced us and conditioned us to be complacent in it and in agreement with it at the same time. I know that sounds incongruent, but what I mean by agreement with it is that we start to believe the things that racism tells us about ourselves. So we start to believe that we are inferior, that we don't deserve love, that we don't know how to have healthy relationships, that we can't communicate. So then we go into isolation, or we go into depression, or we use things like drugs or alcohol to soothe us, or we use sex, or we use gambling, or anything to validate us or to fill this hole or to make anything that make us feel whole. So I don't know the answers. I'm just here talking, giving you just some things to think about, especially for people known as Black, because our suicide rates are going up. Our children are harming themselves. And if it's not directly by cutting their wrists, it's by putting themselves in dangerous situations, because we also don't think about that. Like, our kids are stealing cars or having community violence and things like that because they don't value themselves. And how can you value yourselves when the world tells you repeatedly that you're not valuable? So stick around. We're going to talk about the debate with Trump and Biden. You're listening to 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show. All right, you're tuned in to the Black Conversion Show on 92.7 FM, WMDX. You're listening to Brandi Grayson. I wanted us to talk about this debate that happened this week, the first presidential debate. It was a whole hot mess. Luke, did you have the opportunity to tune in
the
to
opportunity?
It?
Yeah, if that's what you want to call it, sure. The opportunity.
I almost fell out listening to this debate. And I feel so sorry and sad for Biden. And it's because he looks like he's about to fall over and die.
He apparently had a cold, I guess. That was the word. I was, as soon as he started talking and he had a cough, like he coughed 10 seconds into talking. And I was what's going God. On? And apparently he had a cold, which is like the worst, may go down as the worst time cold in history. I don't know, but we'll see.
But prior to the debate, they had him on CNN getting on the airplane. Did you see that clip?
I did not see that
He clip. Had his glasses on. He was walking. He looked like he was going to fall over. Like, he just looked so frail, so old. I feel like the White House, his 4-year terms, he's like 81, but it has aged him to about 95.
Well, remember what Obama looked like when he left?
I know.
Obama was a young man when he went into the White House for the first time, and that man had a lot of salt and pepper in his hair.
He was. Obama looked like he just aged about 30, but at least he wasn't falling apart. Biden, yesterday in the debate, he went to reach for his ear and his hand was shaking. And I know it's nothing wrong with aging. So I don't think that because you're older that you're not capable. But I also think as someone who's looking for a healthy president to make decisions, we want you to be able to be sound mind. And yesterday at the debate, he kept on forgetting what he was going to say. Like he would want to end and then he'll look down and the thought would just be gone.
The hard part is I saw the CNN like letting everybody know the rules. Essentially, CNN went, the light where you see that your time is out is down at the base of the podium.
Okay.
So when he was looking down, it was because if it was flashing,
he
only had
10
seconds
or
left.
Something.
And then once it turned to color, he knew that he was done. And so part of it, I think, was just the setup. It was bad beginning to end forever. There was no winners last night. It was a mess.
So bad. And Trump is like, look, I've been indicted on felonies, but so has your son. And he gonna get indicted too. Like, it was like, Trump, what does Biden's son have to do with the fact that we now have a potential president running for office indicted on 34 counts of felony? And he never really answered the question.
It didn't come up until 30 minutes in. I don't know how that doesn't start the whole thing.
I know. It was just raggedy. And I was like, is this what America is looking like moving forward? And if so, I'm going to encourage everybody to start preparing, because whoever wins, it's just, to me, it's no good look for us as we face the rest of the globe. Like, this is no good. So anyway, I wanted to play a clip of the Biden and Trump debate, and let's just talk about it just for a couple of minutes. Go ahead, Luke. His presidency.
First, discussing a key issue, reproductive rights.
He's willing to, as we say, rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month and kill the baby. Nobody wants that to happen, Democrat or Republican. Nobody wants it to happen.
Hold on, Luke. Pause that for a minute. So according to Trump, when we allow women to have abortions or, you know, pass laws that say, hey, you could go to Planned Parenthood, we're allowing the government to rip babies out of the womb. And let's just talk about how Trump said they're doing abortions at 9 months and after the baby is born. So basically he's saying that we're giving birth to children and then we're killing them, which is absolutely insane. That's not how abortions work at all. So it was almost like Trump, only thing that Trump can give to us is fear and these extremists, extremist Christian views, right, on abortions and what they do. It's like, you ever been to an abortion clinic or drove by like Planned Parenthood and you see all these extremists outside with pictures of babies being aborted, but it's like big babies, like whole full babies. And I'm like, that's not how that works, because 80% of abortions in America happens through the abortion pill. And you have to be under a certain trimester. I think it's the first trimester. Like, you can't actually take the abortion pill after the first trimester. And the other abortions are usually emergency abortions because the mother is in danger or something like that. In most states, I don't think you can have an abortion past 16 weeks. So anyway, go ahead and play rest of the clip for me, Luke. Let's take a look at Biden's response to the abortion question.
True. The Roe v. Wade does not provide for that. That's not the circumstance. Only if a woman's life is in danger, she's going to die. That's the only circumstance in which that can happen. But we are not for late-term abortion, period, period, period.
Biden's called Trump a threat to democracy, holding his predecessor accountable for actions taken while in office.
Pandemic was so badly handled. Many people were dying. All he said was, it's not that serious. Just inject a little bleach into your arm.
While Trump slammed Biden when it comes to immigration and the border crisis.
We have a border that's the most dangerous place anywhere in the world. Consider the most dangerous place anywhere in the world. And he opened it up, and these killers are coming into our country.
But the idea they're emptying their prisons, we're welcoming these people, that's simply not true. There's no data to support what he said. Once again, he's exaggerating. He's lying.
So I think his biggest, Biden's biggest, like, response to Trump was like, you're lying. And I mean, and Trump was lying most of the time. And all I could think about is, oh, how I miss Obama. Oh, how I wish Obama could run for another term. How I wish that this black man could be put back in office, because this just is not.
This is Obama's guy, though.
No, first of all, this is not Obama's guy.
Joe Biden was Obama's guy. That's
no. Oh, no, I'm not. Okay.
I'm not saying currently. I'm just saying in the past, he was his guy.
I'm going to say that Biden wasn't paying no attention to Obama. Like, I don't know what he was doing when he was vice president, but he wasn't. He should have been studying Obama, his words, his body language, his response to, like, debate. He didn't learn nothing from that man. And that man was so smooth with it and so, like, direct. And even,
some of that can't be taught, though.
You're right, because it is. It's just, yeah, it's natural born. But he could have tried to copy it a little bit, because his response around black people and the question around black people was so, like, what the heck? But let's focus on, because we don't have much time, so I want to focus on Trump's response when the question was asked about black people. This is what Trump said. He said, the fact is that this big kill on the black people is the millions of people that's allowed to come through the border. They're taking black jobs, and they could be 18, it could be 19, it could even be 20 million people. They're taking black jobs, and they're taking Hispanic jobs, and if you haven't seen it yet, but you're going to see something that's going to be the worst in our history. What is he talking about? And what black jobs is he talking about? What jobs are we labeling black nowadays? Are you telling me that, I don't know what he's talking about. Are he talking about essential worker jobs? Is that considered black jobs? Because I believe that black Americans have had the lowest unemployment rate over the last 3 or 4 years and the largest increase in establishing businesses in the history of America. We got to go. You're listening to 92.7 FM, The Black Conversion Show.